time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Sign your name, think of a question,
or you shuffle those.
Okay, don't get me wrong. I have a great life. I'm in love with my boyfriend.
God, you guys are adorable.
We know.
I love my job.
With Nubo, age really is just a number.
Okay, I don't love my job, but...
You feel there's something missing?
Yes.
Your life lacks meaning.
Well, not completely.
Clock is ticking.
Okay.
It's not loud yet, but it's there.
Is it just me, or did that sound ominous?
You are about to be pulled in all different directions.
Oh, my God. Jack?
Who's Jack?
The one that got away.
Cammy?
When we said goodbye at the airport, we were kids.
That we were?
We don't know each other anymore.
We could change that.
Wow, look at the time. I gotta get back to a recording session. Oh, I have a 10 o'clock in here today.
It's been moved to Studio B.
Rex Gallier? As in Rex Gallier. That's way overdone, but I can't say that, right? Big sound.
What can I say? I'm a fool for love.
And I got a brass section to prove it.
Are you mocking me?
Just for kicks? Why don't we just solo these horns?
Yeah, yeah.
To understand clearly you like these.
No?
That is the correct answer.
Hey, how would you like to go to Le Comptoir tomorrow night?
You will never get a reservation.
Good thing I already did then.
Paul is taking me to Le Comptoir. Meanwhile, I've been obsessing about Jack all day. Plus, I'm attracted to Rex. That is a big flashing yellow light.
Maybe you should just tell Paul what's going on. He is about to...
Hey, fire! About to what? Paul bought a ring. Oh, my God. When I saw
you,
I
knew this was it. You and I, we're a great team. Been looking for forever for this. You're not a was to me. You're an is.
I'm asking you to take a leap of faith with me. And all I want is you.
The choices I make right now have really big consequences. I don't know what I want. Everything you do. I just need to figure this out for myself.
This is the fun part, when you don't know how it ends. All I want is you.
Damn.
Well, thank heavens. That's all I can say. Thank heavens for one particular specific individual who decided to actually start doing various drop balls to actually work his way through the whole process. Of course, with the result of England 27, Argentina 10, huge thanks is given in the Northern Hemisphere, probably not so in the Southern Hemisphere, for, of course, of the awesome scoring of the England player, who probably, if anything else, certainly deserves to have a knighthood just for that particular turn alone. Of course, great stuff, basically. I'm sure you would actually say, Natasha Wanton, huge celebrations for a 27-10 opening game for England in the Rugby World Cup.
I'm very relieved we got that on off to a good start, because Argentina are not pushovers. So, and we've lost to them before in the group stages of the World Cup. So I'm rather glad that we've sort of navigated that one without egg on our face. So
when you say without egg on our face, obviously we had a player sent off after the first 3 minutes. So that wasn't too good. And George Ford obviously saved our bacon. But apart from that, and assuming it will be Sir George Ford in the New Year's honours list, all's well with the world.
All is well with the world. There are people who are about the process. There are people who are about the results. Normally, I'm about the process, but in terms of the scoreboard today, I suppose we're going for the result.
It's a results game. It's a results game. Fia van den Bogert in the Netherlands, in bulk. Does rugby even cross your attention, or is it just a case of I didn't even know this was happening in France?
I do have to say I didn't know it was happening, because rugby isn't a very big sport in the Netherlands, but I do know the sport. We played it in high school, but I mean, very well done. I mean, it seems like a great win.
Yeah, see, that's the kind of graciousness that we always expect from the Dutch. Whether we get the same from our Royal correspondent, I just don't know. I mean, Richard, did you know there was a Rugby World Cup on, or is it a case of, well, as long as the Princess of Wales was over there, obviously England had to win?
Well, I knew of the match. Yes, I did. I didn't watch it.
Fair enough. Natasha, let's turn to your good self, because Richard chose not to watch the Rugby International World Cup. He probably didn't even watch the England game against Ukraine in Poland, really. I mean, it was just a sporting delight upon sporting delight, etc. But you've chosen love, have you not, for an interactive form which could well be the future of cinema as we know it, in terms of, or is it just another gimmick courtesy of Netflix? Where are you going to take us, Natasha?
I was going to say, Alex, whoa, you're horsey. Let's get to the review first. So this is a new offering up on Netflix. It released on the 31st of August, so basically pretty much last week. And it, as Alex said, it is an interactive movie in sort of a similar style to what we saw back in 2018 with the Black Mirror episode Bandersnatch, where you have multiple different endings. In this one, there are six possible endings, really, that you sort of help the main protagonist navigate throughout the course of the movie. So what is the movie? What is the story? And then I'll get into how we sort of do the selection process. So this sort of starts around a tarot reading with this character of Cammy, and she's played by Laura Morano. I actually quite liked her as an actress. She's not one that I've seen a lot of before, but I thought that with what she got of the script, she tried her best with it. She seems to be in a happy relationship with her boyfriend, Paul. And this is disrupted because she's told by the tarot card reader that there's going to be two other potential lovers. So she gets three cards. She gets the Magician, the Knight, and the Fool. And these are apparently going to be the three men that are going to enter her life. And viewers can basically make the choices that are given to Cammy as the plot goes on. The first of which you sort of get introduced to in the first 2 minutes or so, you get to kind of choose whether she wants to hear the good news or the bad news from the tarot card reader. And it sort of goes on like that. It's one of those movies where, as I said, there's six possible different endings, and there's a redo button. So how you pick is you pick the option. It gives you a little bit of a countdown on the screen, and then you pick which choice you want to pick. And it can be anything from sort of giving advice to her niece about bullying to a decision in a...
Take the date. Escape. Don't take the date. Go, kiss him, yeah, don't kiss him.
The things that are more you'd expect on a mobile, like on a low-budget mobile game, like kiss him, don't kiss him, that kind of thing. And there's at least 12 of these, I would say, that throughout the movie. And the idea is that you can also redo the option and go back and reset it to see how it would have played out if you picked the other option. As you say, there's six possible endings. There's generally a natural ending that it's sort of leaning to, that I sort of picked right off the bat. And with that, the movie only lasted an hour. Whereas when I went back to a certain crucial point in the movie and picked another choice, the movie was then half an hour longer. So it kind of depends which route you pick, but it does sort of always keep trying to push you back to that original main narrative. Is it the future of film? Is this interactive narrative? I picked it because it was a novelty and I'd never seen anything like it before. Do I want to see anything like this again? Short answer, no. Here's the issue when you have an interactive movie, that because you've got it where you can have six possible endings, you don't really feel sold on the characters because they're very intermittent and changey depending on the decisions that you make. You're only sort of given snapshots used to try and help your decision. But when you're only given very limited, unequal amounts to each of the people, as I said, there's sort of a main narrative it wants to go back to. You don't feel like there's a fair distribution to be able to make those choices in an equal keeling. There also doesn't feel like there's any real consequence to your actions because you've given us a do-over button, right? So it's not like you make that, you have a movie, you make the one choice, and then that's it, you've got to watch the movie to the end. You've constantly got this option of going back to your last decision. And then even when you get to the end of the movie, when you've made your final decision over which man she's going for, it then offers you the option to go back to several points in the movie and restart it again. And because you have that option, there isn't really a real sense of ending to this movie. It's just a, oh, let's play the game through. Let's do the reset button. It sort of just keeps going on and on and on and on. And by the end of it, I was feeling a bit kind of bored and frustrated. I did two playthroughs and I was like, yeah, nah, that's kind of enough for me. Although I imagine that you're meant to go back and sort of replay it again and again and again. And that's where
exactly like life
to be. It didn't feel, as I say, it didn't feel good by the end of it. It felt a bit wishy-washy. Like it felt like a gimmick, basically. I would say that the script as well is very cliche. The actors do try and throw all of their charisma to it and be charismatic. There's a very tight cast, and I thought that some of the castings were interesting, but not really enough to kind of draw me into any sort of solid performance. You know, I think it also misses the point of people who want to just throw on a rom-com because they want to throw on a rom-com and kind of just disappear and melt into the viewing of the performance. Whereas with this, you've constantly got to watch everything because you know you're going to be asked. You don't know when you're going to be asked.
Pay attention.
It felt stressful to start with before I found the do-over button. And this woman makes horrible life choices. So I feel like I'm constantly sat on her shoulder trying to be the good angel. Don't cheat, don't cheat, don't cheat, don't cheat. It's very stressful trying to manage this woman's life because she makes some very chaotic judgment. Anyway, no, I don't think I would probably be wanting to do something like this again. I don't believe it's the future of cinema, and I feel like a lot of critics have agreed with me because it's generally done quite poorly with the critical reception to this movie. I'm going to give it a 5, mainly based on novelty, certainly not based on plot, because it's as I say, it's very loose and wishy-washy because it's making the viewer wake all the decisions. Do I think it's the future of cinema? No.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to see what Rick said.
Sorry.
Is this one for you? Or have you just tuned out and decided to press the do-over button and do something completely different?
No, I actually was thinking because it's a very romantic movie, and I think a lot of people, when they watch a romantic movie, they just want to sit down and relax and not have to think as much. And this movie kind of goes the opposite way, like Natasha said. And I think I think I would think the same. I would just want to put up a movie and just watch it and enjoy and not have to like think of all the choices and just be able to relax. And I think that's what people mainly do when they watch a movie. They want to relax. So
they just switch off and are not worried about do they have to select whether the vomit scene takes place, whether it doesn't take place. I don't know. Richard, is this something which appeals to your good self, a do-over, a bit of interactivity so you can actually press the buttons? Presumably it's a one-to-one scenario because I'd hate to actually be in a democracy where you actually have a whole audience that need to be choosing their particular choices. Then presumably they go with the largest number.
Well, Alex, I mean, for me, it's absolutely clear for what Natasha was saying, because you have to have a certain type of mind to want to participate in this to begin with. And I mean, I, for example, I can't do, unless it's totally simple, I can't do any crossword puzzles, say. I mean, I just don't have the mind for word games, that sort of thing. And here, where you've got a variety of choices and all the interactivity that we were hearing about.
Would it give you choice anxiety, Richard?
No, I mean, firstly, this sounds so robotic. Of course, you could take 1 out of 5, you know, the various choices. You could choose several, I suppose. It doesn't seem to me that I would get involved in the characters as though they were real people, having all the options that Natasha's been talking about. I would go very far to avoid having to participate in this. I don't think I'd be much or particularly interested in doing so. It seems to me this is artifice. It's not the future of cinema. You thought that one up.
Well, I mean, I don't know what it can be said about characters not being real people. I always like to feel as though we're always real people when we're actually doing the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, because reality is indeed our middle name. We're not too innocent in that, but Richard, you've decided to go for the innocent for your first choice of movie today, I believe.
Well, yes, I'd hoped Sarah would be with us.
She's driving. She's given up. She's made a different choice. Don't worry. You can press the do-over button at the end, and then she'll come back.
Right. Well, this it's a movie directed by Louis Garrel, and he also acts in it, and he's a co-writer. It's a film that's done rather well in France, and I have to say that it is certainly an interesting and stimulating film, although Sarah actually liked it more than me. Meet Sylvie, played by Anouk Grinberg. She's a prison theatre teacher, and she marries inmate Michel, played by Rushdie Zem, whom she initially teaches and then falls in love with. And she has a habit of falling in love with her teachers and with her pupils in prison. And her son, Abel, played by Louis Garrel, who's the director, was watching this with absolute horror. But he, too, has a problem because in the past he was driving in an accident where his wife Maud was killed, so he's haunted with a certain amount of guilt. When Michel is released, he and Sylvie, they're married, so they open a flower shop. Now, he does that because he knows it's going to make her happy. It's not difficult to make Sylvie happy because she sees the best in everyone and she's forever an optimist and so forth. But when it comes to her son, he intensely distrusts Michelle. He believes that something very strange is going on, which indeed it is. He gets his friend Clemence to, played by Naomi Mallant, to spy. They're not very good at hiding on Michelle, and he finally comes clean. He admits that to pay back the favor of getting the flower shop set up, which makes Sylvie so happy, he and his associate are going to steal a shipment of caviar from a truck. And the whole point is he believes this won't be a theft that really is taking a risk, because the driver eats at a particular restaurant and has a certain pattern every single time when he delivers the shipment. So stealing is going to be no problem. And indeed, he wants Abel and Clemence to participate, so they get a share of the profits, and also they are asked to stage a scene in the cafe where the driver's eating compelling enough to keep him there whilst the theft is going on. Do things go according to plan? That you will have to see. The film was nominated for and won two César awards in France, including one for Naomi Mallant, and its screenplay. It's got some fascinating characters. I particularly like Michelle. He's very humorous. He's got a worldly charm. He's got unquestionably a side that was rather attracted to danger. Rushdie Zem, very good performance. And as Sylvie, a very, very dear human being. Anouk Grinberg, excellent, because she's essentially the very dependent, enthusiastic type, but she doesn't like being double-crossed. So she's got a flower shop, and it has cost a great deal, or at least is going to cost a great deal when the plot of this movie finally works its way out. There are flaws in this 100 minutes because, firstly, we meet the main characters in a prison play. Then, when rehearsals begin for Abel and Clemence, who are going to distract the driver, they want to rehearse how they're going to do it. So we see some of that. And then we see in real time, whilst the theft is going on, how they're actually responding to each other, as well as setting up a dramatic scene. All of this is very, very artificial. And the plot in the movie is it's almost as though the screenwriters had a very good idea, which indeed it is, and made it perhaps, I think, too complicated. Also, it's very funny when they carry the caviar, when some of them carry the caviar when the guys are carrying it, it's so heavy they can hardly move with it, whereas when Clemens is carrying it, assuming she gets to. I don't want to give away anything in the plot. It's as light as anything, so I was quite amused by that. But it's a very enjoyable, unusual film. The settings, as always in French films, very, very attractive. Yes, to be sure, a very unusual movie and a very unusual take on life and some of the individuals who populated it. Fascinating. It's very intriguing. We've actually got two French films today. But The Innocent, with subtitles. Sarah was very, very impressed with this movie and would have given it 10 out of 10. I would certainly go to 8 because I think it is ingenious. It's unusual. It's got some good character studies, but it is too artificial.
We know that obviously the Dutch as a nation are infinitely superior to the French because they're above the French geographically, northern and all sorts of other ways. So that goes without saying. But is this a movie which you might sort of decide to say, well, I'll give my fellow European cousins a chance?
Well, I enjoyed the movie, that's for sure. But there were some points that I thought were just too cliche. And also where it's like, but why would you do this? Especially when... I'm not sure if I can say this, but when Clemence convinces Abel to also join the caviar thing.
Paper.
Yeah, and I was just, but why would you encourage him to do this? I mean, it doesn't really make sense. Like, because
just
in
like
real
France
life,
in many ways.
Yeah, I would never encourage a friend to steal caviar. So... yeah, there were some points that I didn't really enjoy, but overall it was a fun movie to watch, yeah.
You see, this is what happens when you have a country that just can't get its ticketing arrangements right, and English fans are left outside Marseille desperately trying to actually get in. Again and again and again we find the situation. Anyway, Natasha, one for yourself, or is it a case of, well, I'm in Australia, so frankly, what goes on in France stays in France?
Well, I mean, Thea, you sound like a good friend for not convincing them to be involved in a caviar heist. So 10 out of 10 friend points to you. As Richard said, it sounds like a very bizarre, unusual movie. I've not had a chance to watch it yet. I feel like I want to, but I'm also a little bit intimidated that it will be complicated, because even just listening to Richard describe it, it sounds a little bit complicated. So I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to follow it. I don't mind things being cliche or sort of that sort of obvious humor. Sometimes I feel like if it's in the spirit of, if it all sort of blends within the voice and the spirit of the movie, I feel like I can sort of suspend disbelief at those times and get on board that wagon. I will certainly give it a go. I don't think it'll be one that I'll have to switch off. I'm hoping not. I think the relationships of the people involved will be the main sticking point. I think if they manage to sell the relationships, then it will all work, is my hope.
Yeah, perhaps if they could have had a bit more interactivity, kind of, do you go for the caviar, do you not go for the caviar, maybe expanded it on that basis, it might have actually helped engage the viewer more. But, yeah, there we are. Each to their own as far as passages are actually concerned. Directed by Ira Sachs, I believe. So Sachs. Curiously, same surname as Andrew Sachs, formerly, of course, from Fawlty Towers. No relation, I don't think. But Richard, any thoughts on this one? Your next movie that you've decided to go for today, Passages, with, of course, Q, or is it Ben Whishaw?
Exactly. Yes. Ben Whishaw is indeed in it and gives an exceptionally good performance. I mean, I must really, really compliment the actors here. It's billed as a romantic drama, but it's in English, no subtitles, except very rarely. This is very, very powerful. And what sells this movie are the remarkable performances. There are really three fascinating character studies. Meet Thomas, he's a director of film. You see him in the first scene involved in this, who is married to Martin. Thomas is played by Franz Rakowski, married to Martin, played by Ben Whishaw. and he's a German filmmaker. Martin is a printer. And one night he decides he's going to sleep with a woman, Agatha, played by Adele Exarchopoulos. She was with Lea Seydoux in Blue is the Warmest Colour. Now, this was a remarkable film, which won at Cannes, and indeed the actors got special awards. It then got mired in a lot of controversy. But nonetheless, they put in, I thought, amazing performances. And after sleeping with her, he actually decides to tell Martin. Now, Martin doesn't sort of initially disturb him particularly, but when he does it again, then he's asking for trouble. If you do exactly, it's fascinating because we've got a character out of the three here, we've got a character who's deciding that his desires are going to dominate what he does. He's going to do what he wants to. Now, you can't easily do that if you're in complex relationships. This is a very unusual threesome. But, of course, it isn't a threesome which has been agreed by all, far from it. And this is where, obviously, problems begin. And subsequently, the plot becomes absolutely fascinating because Thomas is irresistibly drawn to Agatha. Martin desperately and deeply resents this and throws him out of their flat and decides to sell it. And he starts a relationship with Ahmed, played by Erwan Kapoor-Fale, and that makes Thomas jealous.
Yeah, you see, if they'd only chosen love, Richard, again, going back to Natasha's original interactivity theme, this would not be the problem that it's actually manifested as being.
Well, the problem is, of course, it's undoubtedly a form of passion. Now, Thomas is a very passionate individual, but when Agatha gets pregnant, this adds a completely new dimension to what becomes a crisis. How it works out had me absolutely riveted. And yeah, Thomas doesn't get on with Agatha's parents. He's also got Martin, who's bitter and resentful, and Thomas is the possessive type. So there are recipes here for disaster, and certainly no spoilers from me, but I mean the performance. It's a very human film because all the characters are fascinating. Thomas's impulsiveness is rather like a wrecking ball here, and there's a superb performances. All the various characters, Franz Drzewski, somebody who goes off, does his own thing, and of course it has consequences. Agatha, there's a certain sensitivity, but when she is pregnant and she attends a dinner party with Martin and Thomas, and then hears them make love afterwards, she wonders what is in it, in a relationship with Thomas in the future for her. This is the most graphic scene of gay sex I think I've seen on screen, and it does bring to mind Blue's the Warmest Colour, but in totally different circumstances because the sex scenes in that became very, very controversial. Paris is the setting, and again, very, very appropriate. There's a very raw, authentic mood. I had a few problems with a little bit of the editing, but it's a very, very... it's a compelling movie, superlative performances, and a very, very human situation. It's perfectly clear who's to blame, but that doesn't mitigate the fact that, well, they're in it. How do they get out of it if they do?
Yes, personally, I'd actually give it a hard pass and actually go and see a game of Korfball. Korfball, of course, being a ball sport with similarities to netball and basketball, played by two teams of eight players with four female players and four male players in each team. But don't let my bias actually for Korfball actually sort of impact you on that basis. Fia, would you go Passengers or Korfball?
Oh, I mean, that's just because I love Korfball so much. I would choose...
What's not to love about Korfball?
Yeah, exactly. And it's fun and you can play with other people.
Exactly.
Yeah,
You don't have to worry about getting pregnant or any kind of bodily fluid situations. You can just play the game.
Well, I mean, other from sweat, nothing else. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. Exactly.
It's very uncomplicated, and yeah, we're not.
Press the corfball button. Say no to passengers. That's my line. Natasha, what is your thought on this one? Is it a case of, oh, I've always wanted to have more intense French cinematic drama with graphic descriptions and visualizations of intimate moments?
Aye. Hold on while I get my eyebrows off the ceiling. Everybody needs therapy in this movie, by the sounds of it. Everybody needs therapy. There is a lot of stuff going on in that little short summary that Richard just gave me. Aye. Thomas, I mean, Richard, you very politely described him there as a wrecking ball. I can think of several, maybe firmer ways that he should probably be described by the sounds of his role in the narrative. I think he'd really, really, really irritate me. But I'm fascinated to see how this movie sort of ends up. I watched the trailer for this, and I sort of read the little bit of the synopsis that I saw. And it seemed really interesting. But it's that whole, you made a mistake. Okay, you made a mistake. Everybody, we're all human. We make mistakes. You go back and keep making the same mistake. Dish, naughty
you
boy.
You may be a sociopath or a psychopath.
Exactly. Possibly both. I don't know. I feel like Thomas would, and his sort of self-destructiveness would really irk me. I know you said that it feels really human, and it feels like a very human sort of turn of events. And it probably is, but maybe not the sort of people I want to know. Because they sound self-destructive and toxic.
Or indeed pay money to a cinema to actually endorse the whole thing. Just give it a hard pass.
I mean, yay, I suppose, because, you know, very, very fluid relationships and interesting relationships, and I'm all for diversity among the screen. Hey, great, lovely celebration in that department. Less of the toxicity, please. Less of the toxicness. Let's bring back the wholesome. Let's have a little wholesome too. That'd be nice. Yeah, I think that's my
Choose
general
love.
Standing on the whole
Choose
thing.
Love, Natasha. That's why we started off with yours.
Exactly.
You know, it's quite simple.
But in a non-interactive format where I can just sit and fold my socks in peace.
Yeah. Choose life, choose love. It's both connected there.
And I think this movie is just a very good lesson to everyone. Just don't cheat on your spouse, and don't be toxic. Don't be self-destructive, and go to therapy.
Yes.
Well, it's done
yes.
my heart.
Yes.
Thomas might very well have benefited from therapy, but my good gracious me, there's a scene where he goes to see Agatha's parents, and that does not work out because they actually start asking him questions, and he takes that as being insulting. Thomas is the sort of person who'd end up in a therapy class by picking the chair up over his head and smashing it on the floor and then walking out. So I wouldn't suggest that would be a good thing for him.
He sounds like a lovely individual.
But here's the thing. He has got dynamism. Firstly, he wouldn't have attracted Martin if he hadn't. Secondly, he wouldn't have been a successful film producer or film director. And also, of course, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your interpretation of what happens, no spoilers, Agatha falls for him too. So I fear it does prove that someone with his physicality, I mean, you see that in the trailer, that probably comes out, is not someone whom you can ignore.
Mm. Or maybe you should just ignore the whole movie. Fia, we know that Richard is not a fan for the crosswords in life. He's not particularly a fan of the Rugby World Cup, either Union or Rugby League. But how can you actually get him interested in corfball? Or indeed for the novice, this is going to be the official corfball time. Fia, talk to Richard about corfball, and maybe it might even cross over to Australia as well.
Richard, do you enjoy any other sports besides rugby?
I've never played rugby. I mean, something like tennis, table tennis, chess, swimming, and not group sports.
That makes it very complicated, but I will try. Of course, corfball is a group sport. but it's a fun group sport because there are nice people there and we like to play together and we just have a really great time and there are girls and boys, so it makes a more balance in the group and it's just a lot of fun and you can just play with a ball and go to practice and it's fun.
Sounds to me, Pierre, if someone like Thomas should join that group to liven things up.
Well, I think we would...
there's an exclusion policy that has to be there to a certain extent, even though obviously we would manifest inclusivity where possible. But sometimes you do have to exclude. And that's not being a turf either, you know, just so we're actually saying.
I think Thomas would really enjoy korfball, but I think korfball would not enjoy Thomas.
As ever. The Dutch viewpoint keeps things... It's no surprise, Fia, that it's thanks to the Dutch that South Africa became the civilization it became. You know, that's the key thing. You know, we have to say that. So there you are.
Oh, exactly. A damning thing to say. That is terrifying.
I'm just saying, as a historian, you'll appreciate the connections that the Dutch had with South Africa and how they did such a fine job there. You know, very good.
I think that's what you meant, Alex.
Anyway, Fia, it's been good to have you on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. As we've transferred from that point of view, Sarah, I'm sure we'll continue to be driving, as she will. What's up next week, Richard?
Well, wait and see, Alex. But there will be two.
Natasha,
movies.
You have one that you want to actually engage with. I know. Share with us.
I'm doing A Haunting in Venice.
Exactly.
I'm very, 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 very excited for it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be very brave because I don't do horror, but my husband's going to go with me and I'm going to be a very, very brave girl.
May I ask then what you thought of Death on the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express with Kenneth Branagh in David Suchet's role?
I loved it. I love the two most recent ones. I thought they were great. I really enjoyed them. I know you're not a fan, Richard, but I like Troy and I like these movies too.
Yeah, you say it, Natasha. You say those words. Yeah, go, Natasha. Go.
But anyway. Can I ask, Natasha, are you going to the cinema to watch a horror movie?
It isn't a horror movie. It's
an Agatha Christie movie.
Detective.
It's an Agatha Christie movie, and I don't do the horror genre. People, listeners of this show will know I do not do horror. I don't normally touch any mildly horror element with a 16-foot barge pole. But unfortunately, there are horror elements of this movie, and I
very
really
mild,
want to see this movie.
Very mild, Natasha. Don't worry, it'll be fine.
I am so bad with jump scares, Alex. Pray for the poor people in that cinema room with me. But I'm going to go, and I'm going to be brave, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm telling myself that there's going to be a logical reason why it's all happening, so then
always.
The ooky-kookiness will not be scary.
It's Agatha Christie before she was cancelled. What's not to appreciate? Anyway, on that particular moment, actually, at least she has been cancelled as yet, although I'm sure she will be by the time we actually get around to Natasha's review. To Natasha Wanton, to Fia van den Bogert, and to Richard Fitzwilliams, a huge thanks as ever. And keep watching those movies.
In case I don't see you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Oh.
So what are your thoughts when it comes to money? Is it a case of, well, the love of money is the root of all evil? Is it a case of money worries and concerns are keeping you up at night? Certainly it's an emotive topic, and indeed 34% are actually looking to have emergency packages in place for life, and indeed coping with money challenges as our main financial concern. We're delighted, therefore, to be able to welcome back to the programme financial expert and indeed co-founder of savings platform Raisin, Kevin Mountford. How are you, Kevin?
Hi, Alex. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Always good to connect with your good self. And I mean, in a world where the interest rates seem to be going up and up, although I think there's a suggestion that they might hold off for a moment, lots of change, lots of challenges since we last spoke, of course. How do people actually basically ensure that they can ease their money fears? Or is it just a case of, well, I'm afraid it's never going to happen?
Well, I mean, across the years, Raisin's carried out a number of kind of research projects. I'm very much focused on the likes of financial awareness. And the latest survey suggests and highlights that UK adults are failing to grasp some of the basic understandings. And in terms of managing our financial position, it's important that we're kind of empowered to make the right decision. But lack of knowledge obviously creates a lack of confidence. And to put some context around it, the media's talked understandably about things like inflation, recession, interest rates. Bear in mind, we've had multiple rises over recent months. But over 50% of UK adults don't really understand what those things mean. In itself, that might not be too problematic. But more worryingly, one in four of the adults that we surveyed says that they have a total lack of financial understanding. And as I say, I think that's one of the basic things we need to look at. We as I say, cost of borrowing's gone up, cost of energy. I mean, although the cap's coming down, that could create problems in the winter. And there are charities that are showing some real concerns now that levels of debt in the UK are going to increase. So I think that's the backdrop. But as you say, that, you know, it's important to try and understand what we can do to mitigate some of those risks.
There is, of course, a flip side to the notion that as interest rates have risen, technically savings have actually improved as well. Although, again, there's a bit of a question mark about whether banks have been as ready to actually pass on the interest rates of savers as indeed it has to look after their own borrowing rates, etc. That, again, is a fairly basic piece of financial literacy. Do you think it kind of comes back to that educational side of things, that if people are better educated and understand a little bit more about, again, what an interest rate rise actually means and why it's not necessarily all bad news, it depends on your financial situation, that would actually assist?
Yes. I mean, the researcher referred to states that 20% of respondents actually save nothing from their monthly income. And that obviously creates a problem when, you know, unforeseen bills come in, etc. And I think what we experienced through lockdown was a very different attitude towards saving. So there was kind of daily outgoings that we weren't having to take into account because we were staying at home. And the UK started to build up a really sizable savings pot. And a lot of that was a recognition that there was no emergency savings. And obviously, as cost of living increase, many households will have called upon those savings. But the point you make is valid in so much that most of the savings still sits with the big banks. We're aware that the regulators are trying to give them a bit of a kicking so that they start to be fairer with savers and pass on rate rises in the same way as they do to borrowers. But what we have in the UK is a lot of competition. So we hear terms like challenger banks and kind of neo-tech banks, et cetera. But they're not necessarily brands that people have heard of. But if they knew about financial services compensation scheme, regulated entities, your money's protected up to 85K. So a kind of foreign bank that you don't know, your money's just as safe as it would be in a Barclays or HSBC up to 85K. So we have to be aware of that. And then that gives us the confidence to shop around. So clearly I kind of work at Raisin and we're a savings platform and it's all about giving people choice. But I think we have to be mindful of the fact that financial circumstances are very different. So if somebody's on, you know, a lower income and they're struggling, kind of putting a little bit of money away at the start of the month, as opposed to hoping that we've got money left at the end of it. Thing like regular savers, you can put up, you know, as little as £25 a month away. And I think particularly as we get to this time of the year, and then you've got, you know, kind of Christmas on the horizon and all of those things, I think putting some money away, even if it's a contribution to future expenditure, I think psychologically it gives us a lot more kind of confidence as well. But we are running a campaign on the website, which we're calling Financially Fit. And it's a 30-minute kind of overview of various financial terms. So it's an educational tool. And there's lots of these things online. So I think if we commit to setting a little bit of time aside, improving our awareness, that might allow us to make better choices when it comes to financial products and services.
Is there any generational elements to this? I mean, are people in the younger age range, i.e. below under 30, are they kind of getting a little bit better at their savings? Is it the case of the baby boomers are terrible? Or is it a case of, no, you've got a kind of mixture across the ages?
No, I think there is a mixture. I think that one of the other things to note about is in years gone by, there was a bit of a stigma, or it was a bit taboo to talk about your financial position. And a lot of people do turn to kind of friends, family and communities. And I think that's also an important thing. So whilst we don't necessarily have, you know, lots of financial kind of education as we go through school and university, I think there is, as I say, a general awareness that there are online tools available, personal finance management apps that you can now get. So I think people are opening up to the fact, but, we see that across all age groups, there's varying degrees of financial knowledge. So I think we can all improve, you know, the situation. I just think with younger generation, there is more openness and willingness to talk to friends and family. And that's, as I say, certainly one area that we can help.
And remind us, Kevin, best place to go to check out the assistance that Raisin can provide.
Yeah, so our website is www.raisin.co.uk.
Finance expert Kevin Manford, co-founder of savings platform Raisin. Many thanks indeed. And keep on keeping on, Kevin.
Thanks very much. Have a great day.
Locomotion from this mystic I'm on zone. about to take a trip into oddness and obsolescence through a zone whose boundaries are that of imagination. Accompanying him on this journey is the mesmerizing sound of the Twilight Tone.